place, he told himself, and so, still up on the wall, he moved to the side before dropping down lightly. The room was sparsely furnished, with just a chair facing out the window, overlooking the vast sea, and a small table beside it, for a dinner tray, perhaps. Behind the chair was a trap door, open now, with a secured ladder leading down into the main house. The main house, and the grandfather's treasures. Down went Regis, creeping into the darkness. He padded around on bare feet, getting a lay of the various hallways and doors, stopping and listening at each. Around a corner to the narrow corridor leading to the back of the house, he saw a small light peeking around the edges of a slightly open door. Every step taken with care, every movement in complete silence. The burglar peeked into the room. A single candle burned, and burned low. He could see a grand desk across the way, one too ornate to be that of a minor clerk. Thinking this to be the place of the grandfather's business, the halfling dared push the door a bit further and peer in. To his great relief, the room was empty. To his great delight, the room was full of statues and baubles, a trio of chests, and an assortment of other interesting and likely profitable articles. It had been too easy. Somewhere in the back of his mind, Regis knew that. He had dealt with characters such as Pericolo in his previous life in Kalimport, and never could he have come this far without some resistance. Perhaps it was just the difference between the two cities, he thought. Perhaps here, in smaller and quieter Delphuntal, reputation alone was enough to ensure security. He stood up straight, smiling widely. He reminded himself to check for a trap around the door jamb, but before he even started, he heard a low and ominous growl. Not from inside the room, but behind him. Slowly, Regis turned his head around. His eyes had adjusted to the darkness now, but still the first image that came to him were two sets of eyes shining back at him, at a level just below his own. The halfling held his breath and moved into the room a bit farther. The opening door let the meager light spill out enough for Regis to make out the massive canine forms behind those eyes, enough for Regis to see the shining fangs of the guard mastiffs. He didn't dare move, other than to ease his hand behind him to grab at the edge of the open door. The dogs growled, long and low, barely 10 halfling strides away. Regis knew that he had to move first and fast. His brain screamed at him to flee, but he couldn't, and he couldn't tear his gaze from those threatening sets of eyes. One of the dogs barked, breaking the spell, and both mastiffs leaped as Regis fell into the room. He almost had the door closed when the nearest dog crashed into it, and there they struggled, the dog scraping and barking and pushing back hard. The desperate halfling threw his shoulder against the door, and luck was with him, for he hit it just as the dog backed off, but only so that the beast could leap back in hard. The dog shook from the impact, and Regis stumbled backward. Now both dogs barked and howled and slammed and scraped. He had to get out of there. He ran across the room to the one window and threw it open, but only to find the opening barred. He fumbled for a locking mechanism, but found none. He heard more noise outside the door, down the hall. He rushed around. The door rattled hard. He blew out the candle, though he didn't know why. The door burst in. With a yelp, Spider dived to the corner and scrambled up the wall, feeling the hot breath of pursuit. He got up ahead of the dogs, out of their snapping reach, but to what end? What might he do next? Then it didn't matter. As the darkness flew away and the thunderous retort of a fireball, all the room filling with flame. Regis saw it more than felt it, his brain screaming at him that he was surely burning. For everything around him was burning, including the very wall where he held on. With a terrified shriek, he let go, pitching hard to the floor, nearly knocking himself unconscious. He felt a sharp sting, and now felt the intense heat mounting all around him. He had to get out, but he couldn't. He rolled to his back and looked up at the fiery ceiling. He thought of his poor father. He thought of Drizzt and Catti Bree and Brunner, of his pledge to meet them on the mountains, of the glories they would again find together. But Irula Dun wasn't waiting for him, he knew. Not this time. The heavy, burning timbers collapsed atop him with a tremendous roar and rush of flame. He didn't even hear his own scream. Chapter 12. Mistress. The Year of the Splendors Burning. 1469. D.R. Netheril. It felt to her like a common nightmare, falling helplessly, the deafening wind thundering in her ears. She tumbled and tried to right herself, which only made her twist and spin as she turned head over heels. Dizzy and disoriented, Catti Bree felt her face flapping from the pressure of her speeding descent. Only then did she realize that she was screaming at the top of her lungs, though she couldn't really even hear her voice through the drumbeat of the rushing air. She noted the spin of colors before her, brown and blue, and used that to get her bearings up from down. She stretched out to her full length and threw her arms out wide and gradually managed to stop her tumble. But then, knowing ground from sky once more, another reality struck her profoundly. The ground was much closer, and she was speeding toward it and hadn't the energy to transform into a bird or anything else. She was just a human girl whose bones would shatter to mush when she slammed into the ground. Lady Avalier gasped and threw her hand over her mouth as she watched the scene unfolding in the waters of her scrying pool. She looked to the east, but the child was too far away for Avalier to spot her with the naked eye.
"Go! Go, help her!"
Lady Avalier yelled to a pair of her students who lingered nearby. The young women, Diamone and Shaqua Bin, glanced into the scrying pool, yelped, and rushed away.
"No, no, no," Lady Avalier said to the child who could not hear her. She didn't want it to end like this. There was something here with this young one, something magnificent and intriguing. And now it was ending before her very eyes.
She scoured her brain, seeking some spell she might throw through the scrying pool. Was it even possible? She heard a gasp from behind her and turned to look over her shoulder to see Rial and Erika, both wide-eyed and horrified. Erika began to weep in sympathy. Lady Avalier didn't even want to turn back, for tearing her eyes from the horrifying scene had broken her fixation. There was nothing she could do, she told herself, and so too told herself not to watch the morbid, unfolding catastrophe. But she couldn't resist, and bit her lip as she turned her gaze once more to the plump